Welcome to Vital Voices. Our guest today is Dr. Lawrence Locklear, Director of Southeast American Indian Studies at the University of North Carolina, Pembroke. He is an enrolled citizen of the Lumbee Tribe, which was given full federal recognition for the first time with the signing of the Lumbee Fairness Act in December of 2025. Dr. Locklear, thank you so much for joining us for Vital Voices.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Let's start out with a definition question. There are many people I talk to who know little or nothing about the Lumbee. So let's talk about who the Lumbee are genetically and who the Lumbee are culturally.
So the Lumbee people are situated in southeastern North Carolina in Robeson, Cumberland, Hoke, and Scotland counties. Those are our ancestral homelands. We have about 65,000 enrolled tribal members. The town of Pembroke, which is located in Robeson County, is the cultural, economical, and political heart of the Lumbee tribe. Culturally, our people descend from, culturally and ethnically, we descend from Iroquois and Algonquian and Siouan speaking peoples from the Carolinas, which includes North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. But we descend from those Iroquois and Algonquian and Siouan speaking peoples.
Back in December, the Lumbee Fairness Act was passed, which gave for the very first time full recognition at the federal level for the Lumbee. Tell me about the significance of that legislation.
Oh, it was very significant. Lumbee people have been seeking federal recognition since the 1880s. In 1888, we first requested assistance for education for American Indians here in Robeson County. And then we petitioned or bills were introduced in Congress between that time and the 1950s to have us recognized as a tribe. Well, in 1956, we were recognized by Congress, but we were simultaneously terminated. And what that meant was that we were denied benefits available to other federally recognized tribes. And what was going on at that time was called the federal Indian termination policy. It was the federal government was trying to get out of the Indian business. And so we were recognized but denied benefits. And so we've argued for a long time that we had limited federal recognition. And so finally in 2025, we were able to get full federal recognition, which now entitles us to be able to receive the same services that other federally recognized tribes receive. So for us, it's a huge event, a mark in our history in the sense that it concludes 137 years of a journey that we've been fighting for federal recognition from the federal government. So it's very important to us.
I know this is a complex story and in many cases a painful story, but why did it take so long to achieve full federal recognition for the Lumbees?
That's a great question. I think initially when Lumbee people first petitioned for recognition, we were told that the federal government was already overburdened with responsibilities for other tribes, and they just had limited resources for supporting or taking on the Lumbee people. But over the last few decades, one of the biggest challenges that we've received to federal recognition is from other tribes who had casinos or gaming who were afraid that with Lumbee getting federally recognized, that we would open a casino and therefore be competition to those tribes. Mm-hmm. So some of them were lobbying against our federal recognition efforts in Congress. So fortunately, we were able to overcome that.
Were you yourself involved in any way in the passage of the Lumbee Fairness Act?
I formally served on the Lumbee Tribal Council in 2005 and 2008. And I would like to think that the work that I did with the Tribal Council at that time did in some ways contribute to the passage of the act. As those who said in December when we got federally recognized, it just wasn't folks working on the bill in December 2025 who got it passed. It was folks who had been working over the last 137 years to finally get us at that point where we finally did get recognized. So it took a lot of work on behalf of a lot of folks to get the bill to that point to where we were finally recognized.
What does being a member of the Lumbee tribe mean to you both personally and professionally?
Oh, excellent question. When two Lumbee people meet for the first time, particularly two Lumbee people who don't know each other, when they meet for the first time, the question that we ask each other is, who's your people? And that's a cultural practice of our people that's meant to get at two very important things. One is, it's meant to find out who you're related to, and secondly, where your family is from. And so for me, being Lumbee really boils down to who my to family and community. And so that's really what I'm most proud of with Lumbee people, because everything that we do is based on family and kinship ties. And that's common among other Native communities throughout, not only just the United States, but the Americas. But in terms of professionally, it means that what I really like most about it is when I see Lumbee people who are going out and being very successful in their careers. We have folks who are at all levels of state, federal government, tribal government, in all different types of professional fields. There's Lumbee people there. I jokingly tell folks that if you were to take every single Lumbee and put us in a warehouse, we could take care of each other, because we have doctors, lawyers, folks that can do construction work, you name it, we could take care of ourselves.
One of the people I think about when I think about Lumbees is Kelvin Sampson. Since this is basketball season, the University of Houston basketball coach is a very visible member of the tribe.
Oh, yeah, and we're very proud of him. The tribe was rooting for him last year, you know, when they played for the national championship. And when you talk, with the earlier question, we talked about professionally what Lumbees can do. Kelvin is a great example of a Lumbee who's been very successful in coaching. He's a great person himself, personally. He's well thought of in the community, not just because of what he's done in basketball, but he comes from a great family. His parents are very well respected in this community. He gives back to this community. And so being Lumbee, as you can tell, is very important to him, but we're also, as Lumbees, really proud of him and the great work that he's doing.
Tell me about the name Locklear. I understand that is a common name in Lumbee culture.
Oh, yeah, it's very common. I jokingly tell folks, back when we had phone books, some listeners may be like, what was a phone book? But for those of us who grew up with phone books, I tell folks that when we'd have sometimes have visitors come to town, we'd pull out a phone book and show them pages upon pages of Locklears. Locklear is a very common surname in our community. As within other tribes, many tribes, you can denote their membership based on the surnames that people have, just because certain surnames are very popular. But among Lumbee, Locklear and Oxnine and Lowry are some of our most common surnames. But the Locklear name, it has origins in Europe. I think some folks think it may have French origins, may have English origins. I'm not quite sure. I haven't nailed those down yet, but it is a very common surname. And because many of us share that surname, doesn't mean that we're necessarily related either. It's just a very common surname that's been passed down through the tribe for generations.
Here in East Tennessee, where I am right now, we are in an area populated by a significant number of people who describe themselves as Melungeons. In terms of origins, are there commonalities between the Melungeons and the Lumbee?
I know that I think some of the surnames may be shared. I think, you know, like the surname Goins is very common. It's common among the Lumbee. It's common among the Melungeons, but Goins is also a name that's common among other communities on the East Coast. So there may be some connections. Lumbee people have been leaving Robeson County since before the Civil War, and we've got blood connections to a lot of other communities throughout the United States, you know, because one person that folks like to mention a lot is actress Heather Locklear. Mm-hmm. Her family left this community, I think, probably right after the Civil War. They were following the turpentine industry. I think they left, went to Georgia, and just never came back to Robeson County. And so a lot of Lumbees have dispersed following work and just have never come back.
Let's talk about Lumbee dialects for a moment. What are some usages and words that define those dialects?
That's another great question. So the Lumbee people have a very distinct dialect of English. And it's so distinct that we can pick out speakers of that dialect without even seeing their faces and knowing who the speaker is. Members of the white and black communities here in Robeson County also agree with that. They say that we have a very distinct dialect. Lumbee people lost our traditional language generations ago, and that dialect of English now sort of serves the same purpose as a traditional language in the sense that we communicate with each other in ways and in tones through the dialect of English where we understand what we mean. But for folks who aren't familiar with that dialect, a lot of times we have to explain to them what it is that we're saying. Some examples are a slingshot. We call a slingshot a juvember. Another is hot coffee. We call it illick. Others are like aggravating yerker. That's someone who is getting on your nerves. They're aggravating you. But it's also not necessarily about some of the words. It's just about the sound of it. Yes. Like right now, it's really hard for me to replicate it because I'm code switching, mm-hmm. you know. But if you had some Lumbee elders, particularly older folks who were communicating and talking with each other, you could definitely hear the dialect more with each other. But it is something that really does distinguish us from other communities in southeastern North Carolina.
I am very interested in the history of Southern food. What are some mm-hmm. dishes that are commonly served in Lumbee kitchens?
Yeah, when you talk about traditional foods, you know, that our ancestors ate before Europeans arrived, you know, we ate foods like corn, beans, squash, squirrel, rabbit, deer, nuts, those types of things. Those were traditional foods. Now, the contemporary foods that we eat today have been heavily influenced by Southern culture. And, you know, Southern foodways have been influenced by Native foods, by European foods, and by African foods. And so with what Lumbee people eat, you'll see a good mix of all of that. And for example, one food that's very popular among Lumbees is collard greens. And we know collard greens came from Africa.
Yes.
But Lumbees have developed what's called a collard sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is imagine if you have two pieces of fried cornbread, and between the cornbread you have fried collard greens with some pork grease in them, and then on top of one piece of the fried cornbread, you have a piece of fatback. It's usually about the size of your hand. That's something that Lumbee people probably started 10, 15 years ago, and a lot of non-Lumbee people love coming to Pembroke just to try those collard sandwiches.
So you can find that in restaurants there in Pembroke?
It's more with food trucks and vendors that are at powwows
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, collard greens are a seasonal food sometimes. It's best to find them, you know, late in the fall, early winter. Usually we have a couple vendors that are well known for their collard sandwiches. And usually I'll get mine from one of those vendors, particularly like at Lumbee Homecoming, which is held during July. But we have the collard sandwich. You asked about some others. There's sweet potato bread, which is made from sweet potatoes. There's tater tarts, which are made from sweet potatoes. It's a sweet potato mix that you put between pastry that you roll out. You'll fold the pastry over the mix, and then you bake it. That's something that Lumbee people eat. Something we drink sweet tea, love sweet tea like a lot of other Southern folks. 15-layer chocolate cake is really popular here, so... chicken and pastry, chicken and dumplings. Again, a lot of Southern foods, things you would think are Southern, are very common in our diet also.
When I think of your part of North Carolina, of course, I think of barbecue. Does it play a role in Lumbee food culture?
Oh, yeah, very much so. Very much so. Barbecue is barbecue and fried chicken, just like other Southern folks, is very, very, very popular here. Yes.
Tell me about the University of North Carolina, Pembroke, and its history of educating Lumbees.
Sure. Yeah, UNC Pembroke was founded in 1887 to train Lumbee peoples to be teachers. And the thing that's really unique about UNC Pembroke is that it was founded by the state of North Carolina at a time when schools were segregated along racial lines, and Indian people in 1885 began pushing for separate schools that Indian people could administer or have control over. And so in 1885, separate schools were established for Indians in Robeson County. And then 2 years later, we decided we want an institution where we could train Indian people to teach in those schools. And so in 1887, what became UNC Pembroke was established. It remained an all-Indian institution until 1952, which was 2 years before Brown versus Board of Education, when we enrolled our first non-Indian student. And so what's interesting is between 1939 and 1953, we were the only state-supported four-year college for American Indians in all of the United States. And so today we have, I think, about 13% of our student enrollment is American Indian, which places us, I think, in the top 10 nationally in terms of institutions with American Indian student enrollment.
Tell me about the Museum of the Southeast American Indian, which I believe is on your campus.
Yes. The museum was established in the mid-1970s, and its sole purpose is really to tell the story, history, and culture and experience of American Indian peoples in the southeastern United States. While it does have a large focus on Lumbee, the museum does has exhibits that focus on tribes from throughout the southeast, and those are tribes that historically were located in the southeast, but were relocated to Oklahoma. Those tribes are included also. The museum is open Monday through Fridays from 8 to 5. It is a really great place to start if you're visiting the Lumbee community. You want to learn more about the community, the museum. I definitely would suggest come by the museum in Old Main at UNC Pembroke.
Dr. Lawrence Locklear, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for joining us for Vital Voices.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Our guest today has been Dr. Lawrence Locklear, Director of Southeast American Indian Studies at the University of North Carolina, Pembroke. He is an enrolled citizen of the Lumbee Tribe. For Vital Voices, I'm Fred Sausman.